Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome to Sports Day. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you. Plenty to talk about tonight. Todd Greenberg, the boss of the Australian Cricketers Association, he's going to join us. Plenty to talk about with Todd. We heard from Paul Marsh just before we went off air last night in a very odd statement, it must be said, surrounding vaccines and the, as he puts it, pursuit of players who are still deciding. We've got the biggest footy story at the moment, the fact that Jordan De Goey is getting fit.
Stop. Stop that.
Very, very strange turn of events. And we've also got the Australian Open in the midst of negotiations with both federal and state health authorities as to whether unvaccinated players, and let's be honest, it's all about Novak Djokovic, or as Jared calls him, Novaxed Djokovic, and whether he's going to be able to come. The Serbian telling local media in the last 24 hours, things being as they are, I still don't know if I'll go to Melbourne. I will not reveal my status. Whether I've been vaccinated or not, it's a private matter and an inappropriate matter. Well, it might be private for you, Novak, but when you're coming to a country and a city that has been locked down more than anyone else, it is anything but public, unfortunately. And then the Premier weighed in on things today.
I don't think an unvaccinated tennis player is going to get a visa to come into this country. And if they did get a visa, they'd probably have to quarantine for a couple of weeks. I don't know that that will necessarily, when no other players have to. So I don't think that that's going to be a relevant issue. They will have to be vaccinated.
They will have to be vaccinated. But you can see there a little bit of hesitation in the Premier's voice there, because you've got Tennis Australia and the state government who, to some degree, are quite rightly saying, well, it's the federal government that decides who comes into the country and under what circumstances. Now, the argument against that was, well, hang on, the state government has actually said, if you're a permitted or essential worker, as of, what was it, October 15, you have to have at least one jab, and as of whatever the next date is, you have to have two. But could they make a special category for international athletes? I'm not sure. This is going to be, I don't want to call it a game, but it's who blinks first here. Is Novak Djokovic just going to blink, get vaxxed, come here, try to become a 10-time Australian Open champion and go out ahead of Roger and Rafa? Or is it going to be our government saying, well, actually, we think you can come and we'll make special circumstances for you?
Well, wouldn't there be also a scenario at play that if the federal government, as what's happened a lot, the states have gone their own way, couldn't there be actually a scenario that plays out that Novak shops around to find a state to fly into, and then because of those...
Yeah, but then he'll come here and then be...
But then you're under the relationship between state to state.
Yeah.
So he gets here and plays, say, the Brisbane tournament.
International, yeah.
In Brisbane International, which might have a different arrangement for Novak.
Mm.
He'll be there for a couple of weeks, and then he becomes under Queensland rules in regard to Victoria, wouldn't he?
Yeah, I'm not staggered, but I'm just... And we talked about this with Tom McDonald last night. Pro-choice or not, if that's fine. But for him to say it's a private matter and an inappropriate manner...
It's not.
I think that's just naive.
Yeah, well, but that's it.
But he's shown his naivety before with COVID-19. Yeah, he's the only one having a party and telling him and broadcasting it to the rest of the world. But this isn't the first time he's put himself in this situation.
But you've got to understand the world that tennis players live in. This is not an excuse. They live a bubble with inside a bubble.
Like, no, I think that's grouping too many tennis players together. I think there are many tennis players out there who are extremely down to earth. And
I didn't say that. You made an assumption there that I thought they were anything but that.
But get defensive.
No, but what I was going to say before you jumped in there,
sorry,
was the fact that because they live in such a bubble where there's such an individual sport that the world revolves around them.
Yep.
Because that's how they compete. They revolve around them. That's why they put
They're forced to think like that. Yep.
Yeah, they put their team around them, what they eat, what they drink, where they stay, where they go to. You even look at the way they react on the court. It's around them. Mm. They're the central piece of the people are in their world, and that world lives in a bubble, which is inside a bubble.
Roger Rashid joins us live to talk about this. Rog, we love having you on. What was your first thought when you read Novak's comments?
Hey, Sam and Jimmy, how are you, boys? Yeah, look, it's interesting. I mean, Novak's not, obviously, he doesn't He doesn't shirk the issues. He talks how he feels, and he has his own personal thoughts on this matter, obviously. And he's travelled all throughout the course of this year, as has all the other tennis players, going into different countries and trying to work with the organisations in the countries to get the tournaments on board. I feel like the reality is that he's going to have to show his hand at some point, because once you bounce into Australia, if you want to play in the tournaments, I guess you're going to have to sit under the conditions. And in Victoria, obviously, if you're not vaccinated, you're going to have to do a quarantine period of 14 days. So if Novak just decides to go into Victoria, we'll know that. And if he decides to do that, just do a couple of weeks training somewhere else, obviously, we'll be able to pick the fact that he's chosen one way or the other, won't we?
Roger, you're a great man to ask about this, because you've worn the tennis hat most of your life, and you understand, as you said, the international nature of it, and I guess how you have to prepare everything wherever you go in the world. But you're also a proud Australian as well, and you understand what Victorians and Australians have gone through with the continuous lockdown. So how do you feel personally about Novak not wanting to declare his hand?
Look, I just think he's got to, if he wants to speak up on this subject, then he has done quite a bit and other subjects throughout the course, and be a role model there. Well, if he's not vaccinated, we'll speak up and I think just say it and put it out there. Does it really, I know he made comments about whatever you say, you're going to get some attention to it. Sure, but he's the number one player in the world. He leads the game, and so he's a role model. And so I would just think, look, if he's decided that's the way he's going to play this out for his own personal reasons, well, then he just needs to say, these are my beliefs, and currently I'm going to sit in this space, and therefore if I come to Australia, I'll work with the organisation, the federation, the government, state and federal, to make sure I can do it the way that's needed. And if that's 2 weeks, Jimmy, and for any other player, well, that's 2 weeks, and I'm sure they'll work with Tennis Australia to get the most comfortable space possible. And as I said before, Sam, that might be Novak, renting a house which has got a court and a pool and all those sort of things, so he can train and do the recovery, etc.
You know this better than most, Roger. Like the unbelievable competitive beast that Novak is. It's been building in me the last couple of weeks. I just can't see a circumstance in which he doesn't come here. Now, whether he's vaccinated or not, the fact that what's going on in the slam count with him, Roger and Rafa, I mean, this is once in career, once in a lifetime sort of stuff. And I just feel like he's going to find a way to get here and compete.
No, he'll be here in January. Don't worry about that. I think it's a given that he'll be here in January. I just think it'll be, obviously, we'll get to a vaccination rate here in Australia by then that, the circumstances, even the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks, circumstances are going to change. It's always, as you guys know, it's been a moving target on a daily basis. Now we're getting closer and closer to unravelling everything. So with that, all the circumstances are going to change as we get to the new year. So he's Novak's really only probably interested in what's happening towards the end of December, middle of December through December, because those conditions will probably dictate how it works when he gets into Australia. But I'm with you. He wants to break the record. It would be brilliant for us to have him in Australia. If he happens to do it here at the Australian Open, we would want to make sure that we have the opportunity for that record to be broken in Australia, I think, because that's obviously something that will sit up there in world sport.
Roger, if you were coaching him, how would you advise him as far as how early to get out here? I'm not saying what to do, but as Sam touched on, he is like a machine up the other end. It's like unbeatable. He's just a wall and he just pounds the ball. Can he just be a guy who just times it beautifully and he just comes straight into an Australian Open? Or would you say to him as coach, look, come for Brisbane, come for Kooyong, whatever it may be?
He probably needs, Jimmy, he'll do a big pre-season, so he's going to have a big pre-season under his belt, there's no doubt about it. So he'll be well conditioned, he always has been. And then he needs probably 1 week of tennis. If that's in the form of exhibition matches or match play, that probably doesn't matter, in the sense that, through the early part of the tournament, Novak's very hard to beat at any time, but so in the early part, he gets a bit of a chance to find his feet. And then, you're playing over 5 sets, so it's not so cutthroat if you lose a set. You can't, you've got some time to work your way in the tennis match. So look, and he's just a pure ball striker. So, and he's an animal competitor, and I say that in a good way. That there's not too many competitors that like to put themselves out there and take on all in front of them like Novak has on the world stage. So I don't think his preparation will be a problem. And I'm sure he's going to deal with the circumstances. They've dealt with a lot this year, and Tennis Australia are working really hard to make sure that they'll create as much comfort as possible. They understand what happened last year. They did their best, and they did exactly the right thing. And the players, you know, the majority of players, 99% of the players were very grateful they had the opportunity to come to Australia and play last year, and they will do so again this year, obviously under extremely a lot more healthier conditions.
In saying that, Novak is, as you said, very outspoken. He's a leader on and off the court. Will his decision, would there be a number of players sitting back and saying what happens with him, or is this sort of Novak just being Novak?
Yeah, I think, he obviously is a spokesperson he sees that as for the players and the playing group of, but he'll do what needs to be done for him. At the end of the day, it's an individual sport. Your job's to be prepare yourself personally. So whatever suits him. There are a lot of players that are as Novak is, he's grateful of the opportunity that the sport has virtually kept going through COVID. I think he's just going to do what's for him. Other players will have different, even some players that also are not yet vaccinated, they'll be prepared to say, well, they're the conditions. I want to play in a major. There's not too many people, Jimmy, that wouldn't want to play in Sam in major events. There's only four of them. And you'll do what you'll do what you do to get there.
No, my backhand held me back. I kept hitting the back fence. So, yeah.
Well, you're saying your forehand was good.
Oh, it was a weapon.
Really?
Yeah, keep it away from me, mate.
But were you fast twitch? Could you get around your backhand just to protect it with the forehand or not?
No, nothing about me is fast twitch. I was probably the slowest moving AFL player in history. Yeah.
So you wouldn't have been nimble enough to get to the net a lot?
No, it was...
You were a baseline player.
Look, I'm a three-shot max sort of guy. Like, if the first serve doesn't go, we're in trouble.
And if you see the ball, swing hard and go for it. That's the way I've coached all the time. If you've got time to have a full swing, get after it.
Exactly.
Thanks for coming on, Rog.
See you, boys.
Roger Rashid there, tennis coach, commentator, one of the go-to men with tennis in this country. Yeah, it's a fascinating one. I mean, I'm with Roger. I think he's coming. It's just what's the reaction going to be Australians if he comes and he's not vaccinated?
What are the conditions? I know Dan Andrews also put in that little bit of thing. He goes, he might have to do 2 weeks, as Roger and yourself highlighted. But that 2 weeks could be in a big Jared Healy-style abode with tennis courts and pools.
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's whether he should be allowed to work in Victoria while unvaccinated. 13-13-32, I'm really interested in people's thoughts here because there are, at the moment, there are tradesmen, there are cleaners, there are nurses, there are odds of Friday people working behind the bars pouring beers that are not allowed to work unless they are fully vaccinated and have proof of vaccine.
Nearly every industry has been affected.
But, it hasn't been ruled out yet that there is a possibility, I'm not trying to over-dramatise this, that Novak Djokovic and other top-line tennis players are going to be allowed into this country while unvaccinated, yes, forced to do 2 weeks of quarantine, but then once they do that, allowed, unlike a lot of other Victorians, to work while unvaccinated. I just wonder how people feel about that. 13-13-32, Jimmy and I'll be right back.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. The calls for Novak Djokovic and whether he should be allowed to play in the Australian Open while unvaccinated have come thick and fast. We're going to start with Nerese from Southbank.
Hi, Novak.
Yeah,
it's just simple. It's AFL players can't play. And he's not the only tennis player. That's one of the beautiful things. We've got Daniil. We've got so many top players out there right now. We don't need Novak here. We don't need him for the crowd. So, we're not going to be at 100%.
So on that, Nuri, and I don't disagree with what you're saying, by the way, but it is interesting you say that, AFL players won't be allowed to play unless vaccinated. That's not entirely true yet. Now, it may well be true, Naree, but at the moment, that's just a mandate for Victorian teams. I think Naree's...
Okay, but, yep. Alrighty. That I didn't know, so I'm corrected there. But he's got to be strict. Like, we have lost jobs, friends have lost companies, yeah. we haven't been able to see grandkids. We don't go through all that, so Novak, which I'm so not a fan of, sulks and throws rackets around, and we're saying, oh, you can do anything you like, but come here. I mean, we'll call his bluff. We know what he's like about trying to get titles and trying to beat Rafa and that, so just call his bluff. I mean, if he doesn't want to come, if he doesn't want another slam under his belt, then that's his choice.
Jeez,
so if we've done it, we haven't done it for him to come in.
Geez, I'd vote for Naree.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can she run for office?
Clear, concise, straight to the point. Who else we got?
Brendan's on the road. G'day, Brendan.
How you going? No, he shouldn't be allowed to play if he's not vaccinated. We're not allowed to work unless we're vaccinated.
Mm.
That's the terms and conditions, isn't it?
Yep, thanks.
Terms and conditions. If he doesn't like it, stay home. He's getting thousands and thousands of dollars to turn up and play. I wish we could get that money for working.
Yep. No, I hear you, Brendan. It might even be more than that, too. Sam's in Ballarat. G'day, Sam.
G'day, mate. How are you?
We're good.
Yeah, I don't think he should be allowed to come. I work in the healthcare system, and we needed a jab to go to work, and we had about 30 people stood down on Friday because they didn't believe in it. So I don't think he should be able to come to Australia to play tennis for a multi-million-dollar tournament.
Yep, you can hear a theme developing here. Steve's in Bulla. Thanks, Sam. G'day, Steve.
G'day. Not a hope in goat hell can he come in this country. We won't be flying Qantas because Mr. Joyce won't let anyone on Qantas that's not vaccinated fly. But how can you have the whole of Australia, like I'm in Victoria, I'm an authorised worker, and I've got to be double jabbed. My wife's a nurse, she has to be double jabbed. We all have to be double jabbed to work and to live, to have some type of quality of care. Why should this clown, think that he's just above it all? And at the end of the day, he hits a ball around the tennis court. Sorry, guys, no. That's a bad example for everybody.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah, so the interesting thing with this, Jimmy, is that, so let's say, we're jumping it to assumptions. I get that. But let's just say if he does refuse to get vaccinated, but the federal government allow him to come here, right, and he does 2 weeks of quarantine because he's unvaccinated, so he has to do the 2 weeks of quarantine, and then he decides, then the Australian Open say you can play, but you have to, you know, you're not allowed to go out to cafes, you're not allowed to go out to pubs, but you can actually play. What are his other tennis players, his peers, how are they going to feel sharing a court with him?
They're going to be upset. I think this, what's coming across strongly is the sense of entitlement, the fact that he's dictating terms to the government. And you heard nearly every one of those callers reference their own work, which is their livelihood, that they have to be vaccinated. Not anything to do with quarantine. I get what you're saying regarding quarantine, but they have to be vaccinated to be able to get a paycheck.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's the thing that irks people the most and that resonates with Victorians. And I think that's something that, I'm not defending Novak here, by the way, at all, because I agree with mainly the theme coming through. But unless you've actually been here, you know, when I was in WA for the footy, even then, they don't know what Victorians have been through. And that's not their fault, by the way, because they've been living in relative freedom throughout all of this. But unless you've actually been here and picked up the paper and seen headlines about breaking records for number of days in lockdown, and you've known, you know, parents and cousins and best mates and daughters and sons that have been affected by it, you don't know what people have been through. Yeah. And then when you hear that after all of this and we're being forced to be vaccinated, if you want to work, that Novak could come here and not be vaccinated, I can understand why it angers people. Matty's in Melbourne. G'day, Matty.
Yeah, hi, guys. Mark my words. He will come here, he will play unvaccinated, and it will be so. You watch. This whole thing has been pushed by money, because you know, we're what, $9 billion in debt.
So what are you saying, Manny? He will come, but he won't play.
What I'm saying is that he will come here and he will play. They will allow him to play because he's going to bring some money.
Mm.
That's what I'm saying.
I think that
you watch.
Can you imagine the buyback from it? There was a lot of...
You just had a little taste of it.
Well, but there was an incredible amount of angst last year for the Australian Open when we had players coming here who had tested positive for COVID. We're a year on from that.
Tennis Sangren.
Yes. Yeah. Twice.
Yep.
So I just don't – I think that, as we mentioned, the terms and conditions to play in the Australian Open, you make it clear.
It's also not helped with the fact that Novak is much maligned by tennis fans as well, despite the fact that he's a nine-time winner here.
And he's the best player.
And he's the best. Nick's in Hopper's Crossing. We might make you our last, Nick.
Hey, you going, gentlemen? I'm going to go against the grain.
Okay, sure.
Reason being, it's his choice.
Yep.
I understand the anger out there. I'm angry too because of the stupid government. I'm not going to say the Premier or nothing. I'm not going to get personal. But there's quite a few players that are like that. I reckon he will come. The only way he will come is if he's allowed to get a visa from the federal government.
Yeah.
They allow it. Then he's going to do 2 weeks quarantine maybe in New South Wales or Queens, wherever it is, play a tournament. And then it'll be up to the state government and the tournament here whether they allow it. That'll be the sticky problem. That'll be the biggest problem, I think.
But I think Nick's nailed it. I agree with him entirely. Yeah. I think that he probably will be granted a visa by the federal government and then have to do 2 weeks of quarantine.
And then
it's going to be a really tough decision for the Andrews government / health authority / Tennis Australia of what are the optics going to look like of letting this guy work.
Oh, if you're Novak Djokovic's camp, you're pitching, I'll do that, 2 weeks quarantine, I'll stay in my hotel, I'll get tested every second day. As soon as I test positive, I'm done.
Yeah, when I win a game, I can't shake hands with my opponent. I have to basically go off into my own bubble with my own separate change room, be driven in a bus with... I mean, it's going to be messy.
What about the liability, though, for the Australian Open if another person tests positive, a men's singles player, and Novak is unvaccinated?
Yeah.
So
it is a minefield.
Mm. The legalities.
Yeah, but the first port of call, I think, personally, speaking to people today, is what are the federal government going to say about international rivals and vaccinations? And that will start the domino effect. More Sports Day with Jimmy Bartel right after this.
Sports Day for Kia. The new Kia Niro electric SUV range has landed. And Red Energy, awarded Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021. That's Red Energy.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Still got Todd Greenberg coming up, the CEO of the Australian Cricketers Association. What are their mandates, if any, for vaccines among cricketers? All that to discuss and more. But first, time for news headlines with Tony Tardio. It's all thanks to Sutton Tools.
Good evening. The state government has announced a new $21 million package to break down barriers to vaccination for vulnerable sectors of the community, including survivors of family violence. Victoria has today reported 1,749 new COVID cases and 11 deaths, including two women and two men in their 70s. The estranged partner of a young Bayswater North mother has been charged with her murder. 32-year-old Michelle Durrer was pregnant with her third child when she was found dead on October 9. A Ballarat construction company has admitted breaching workplace safety laws that led to the deaths of two young tradies in a trench collapse. And the ground search in Western Australia for missing 4-year-old Cleo Smith has resumed. Bad weather this morning forced police to suspend the search. Heavy rain and high winds made it unsafe for the police and SES volunteers to continue. More news at 7.
Time now for a sports update for Tyre Power, Australia's biggest independent tyre retailer, keeping you safe on the roads. Tyrepower.com.au.
It's been a massive process, you could say, to get over here. It's not something that happens easy, but I had to go to the US Embassy and interviews and whatnot and proof of, work and stuff like that. So it wasn't easy, but, grateful to be here. A process, you could say, to get over here. It's not something that happens easy, but I had to go to the US Embassy and interviews and whatnot and proof of, work and stuff like that. So it wasn't easy, but, grateful to be here.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Jordan Dugali doing interviews at the US Embassy. Not on the list of things that I expected to hear in the build-up to season 2022. He's gone over to California and doing some extra training. Mitch Cleary, the story there on 7. Good story by Mitch. He's looking cut, I must say.
But, is he?
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, you're not happy about this?
Stories that we don't need to hear
of. You're very grumbly.
stories we need to don't need to hear more of in football world, you journalist types.
Here we go.
Is people's off-season training. Just show up fit and show us on the field. And who wins the time trial? No one cares who wins the 2K time trial. It means nothing towards the game of football.
I tell you what would be a good listicle, right, that no one could ever do because of the crazy world that we live in.
No one cares about the time trial.
Give me the 10 footballers, right? You can speak to all 18 clubs and they'd all tell you, as long as no one was quoting anyone. The 10 footballers that consistently turn up in the worst shape day one of preseason. I can give you five now off the top of my head. I'm not going to, but...
I can give you...
Maybe a controversial story
I can
in
give you
2021.
I can give you teammates who consistently over a 10-year period finished in the bottom five for a time trial and played over 250 games, each and one of them.
Could I guess them?
Yes, go for it.
No, I'm not going to do that. But there's a difference between finishing poor in a time trial and just consistently turning up unfit, isn't it?
Yes, that's a different thing. That's talking about professionalism. Yeah, time trial.
I'm talking about professionalism.
Yeah, look, time trials, yeah, cool, good measure and that. But don't make it like they've just won the Olympics, a gold medal, you types, media types. Go through the AFL draft camp combine and look at the top 10 2K time trialists and top 10 speed. It's not exactly the who's who's list of future AFL champions.
Mm.
There's some good players in there, some really good players. Because you still need to play the game.
Hmm. Trying to think of the guys that famously did well in the draft combine.
Running five laps.
Josh Kelly was very good. Whitfield was good.
Excellent.
Dan Hannabry was good.
Excellent. But
definitely missing some.
But it's not the measure, be all, end all measure of football.
Be all, end all measure.
I can nearly get that.
Todd Greenberg is the boss of the Australian Cricketers Association. He's going to join us next. Welcome back to Sports. I think you'd be great on reality TV, but it's a conversation we can have another time. Jimmy Bartel is with me, Sports Day for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. I'm just about to chat to Todd Greenberg, the boss of the Australian Cricketers Association. So on the other side for footy, the AFL Players Association boss, Paul Marsh, last night, a weird statement that he put on Twitter. Let me read a little bit of it. The pursuit of players who are still deciding to decide not to or are unable to get vaccinated for COVID-19 applies unfair and necessary pressure on them and their loved ones in circumstances where the rest of us would be afforded privacy. Our players are passionate about the game. The decision not to receive a vaccine that may ultimately mean walking away from a career they love is not a decision that any player would make lightly. He then goes on to almost point towards the media, I reckon. Whilst we know that people will be interested in these cases, especially one that season returns, we ask that people refrain from speculating on the identity of these players and respect the privacy of anyone impacted by the virus as they recover. Clubs will, of course, share necessary details at the right time of positive cases.
The reason why people are speculating because there's an information void from the Players Association, the AFL, on what their stance is, which has been created. And you're supposed to be, you're the leader of the players. You're appointed as leader of the players. That's your title.
Yep. Todd Greenberg is the leader of the players for the Cricketers, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Todd, welcome.
Evening, guys. Nice to talk to you.
It's a precarious position, I think is the best way of putting it, and it's a bit of a minefield for all of us, Todd. What's the structure of what you've been telling your players? Is there a mandate? And I guess by virtue of the fact that a lot of your players play internationally, it makes it a different scenario.
Yeah, we certainly haven't mandated it to anybody. We've taken a slightly nuanced approach with Cricket Australia and tried to do as much education and information sharing as we possibly can. And I've got to give the state associations around the country and Cricket Australia's medics an enormous rap because they've done an enormous amount of work with the playing groups, giving them lots of information. And look, I don't have the most recent data in front of me, but as of a couple of days ago, we were all but there. We're almost to 100% of all our players with first dose. And I think we're well past 90% fully vaccinated. So,
Todd, you haven't had anyone come to you and say that they don't want to get vaccinated?
No, we haven't. We've had some questions. We've had lots of questions, and rightfully so. I think like anybody in the community, they would ask questions about vaccination. But we've tried to give them all of the information. So rather than, you know, push the information, we're opening up dialogue. And it's been really well received. I mean, as you've just said before, you know, cricket's an international game. So people realise that if you're going to go internationally, you're going to need a vaccination in order to travel. So, you know, this is across all of our national men's and women's teams, all domestic players, BBL, WBBL, all the way across the country. So, you know, we're in a really, really positive position as we head into summer.
Todd, Jimmy Bartel, really appreciate you coming on and being open and having this discussion because, as we know, everyone's fascinated by what all their sporting codes are doing. A lot of Australian sports love to look overseas, and we see the NBA Players Association was one of the first to make sort of conditions. If you are vaccinated or you're not, so then they allow the choice. Is that a discussion being had with the Australian Cricket Board?
Oh, I think it's a discussion being had with all sports, to be fair, between the players and all sports governing bodies. And there's a number of different ways you can take this. In cricket, the view that we've taken is that rather than push a policy on somebody, let's have a conversation and see where that takes us. And, you know, in a really mature sport like cricket is, you know, with a really high quality playing group, both across males and females, we've seen, you know, pretty much 100% compliance on vaccination. So I think that sends a really good message. All credit to Cricket Australia and the state associations for working closely with us on that. And as I said before, the chief medical officers have spent an enormous amount of time educating players and giving them the right information in order to make good informed decisions. And, you know, ultimately what they're doing is protecting each other, but importantly also they're protecting the game.
Well, you're ultimately charged with protecting the players. That's your brief, that's your charter. Have you workshopped if you had a player or a number of players who said, we will not get vaccinated, but yet Australian cricket says you need to be double vaxxed to play?
Yeah, so we have worked through those at the very beginning, and ultimately, you know, there are impacts for people making decisions. So you have to make decisions, and what those decisions come with are consequences. And some of those consequences will be enforced upon by governing bodies. Others will be enforced upon by government, and some just on private business. I mean, let's face it, if I want to come to Melbourne next month and I want to fly on Qantas, I'm going to have to be double vaccinated. That's a rule that Qantas have made. So I just think that, you know, in the reality and for all of us is there'll be consequences to decisions, and ultimately people need to be well informed to make those decisions.
So Todd, on that, in principle, from where you sit, do you think decisions on mandating or saying that people in a professional landscape need to be vaccinated should be made by, in your circumstance, Cricket Australia, or it should be left up to federal and state health authorities?
Yeah, we're just of the firm view that trying to push something onto somebody and mandating it won't probably get you the result you're looking for. Working together and trying to find a way through some of those challenges is a better course of action. And that's certainly been evidenced by the approach we've taken with Cricket Australia and this particular model. Now, it may not work for everybody, but it's certainly working in our environment. And I'm really pleased about that because what it's meant is that the players and the game are aligned in the position and they're aligned in the approach. And I think that augurs well for a partnership, if you like, going forward.
We live in a very litigious world, you know, at the moment. What happens if someone who decides to be unvaxxed, but yet they come into contact and, you know, pass on the virus to someone who is vaxxed? Wouldn't that put a very difficult situation for the entire sport?
Oh, I think it's a question, it's a really difficult question for the entire community. What happens if we're at a game and it happens to a crowd member asking for an autograph, you know, all those sorts of things? What are our venues going to be doing around the country in relation to vaccinated entry or not? You know, there's a multitude of questions that I think are coming down for all leaders across all businesses and sports, and cricket's not immune to that. But, you know, we're working our way through that slowly and surely, and I think we are going to have some challenges. There's no doubt there's going to be some bumps in the road between now and the start of the Ashes and through the Ashes. But, you know, open dialogue, information, and having honest conversations with people are probably the only way through.
One of those honest conversations, I'm sure, will be with Dominic Perrottet. I'm sure, Todd, you've got him on speed dial by now. With all the players coming back into Australia, particularly those from the Middle East early November and onwards, is it just likely, given the new border laws in New South Wales, they'll come through Sydney?
Yeah, well, it's fair to say some of our IPL players have delayed their flights until 1 November to come home. And why wouldn't you if you can come home now and not have to do 14 days of hard quarantine? Many of our players have made huge sacrifices over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months and have done it multiple times, so they'll be pleased not to do that. But, yeah, certainly the route in through Sydney is going to be much easier for a lot of the players. And that'll be really welcomed by a lot of them who are all double vaxxed and have been double vaxxed for a long period of time and get home to their families and make it a lot more seamless. So we're really pleased about that.
And before you leave us, any potential changes to the schedule of the Ashes given border regulations?
No, look, I think, you know, we're obviously an issue for Cricket Australia, but in my discussions with Nick and his team, you know, they're really keen to see the Ashes played as per the schedule. And
yep.
We're very confident. We have been very confident the whole way through that'll be the case. And really looking forward to the 8th of December, 50 days today till the start of the Ashes. So there's a lot of excited players. So, and there's equally a lot of excited fans. So we're all looking forward to it.
Todd, really appreciate you coming on. It's an interesting time for everyone in sport. We can't wait for the Ashes. 50 days and counting. Talk soon.
Good on you, guys. Nice to chat. Cheers.
Todd Greenberg there, the boss of the Australian Cricketers Association. We'll come back and wrap up with Jimmy. Welcome back to Sports Age. Just coming up to the 7 o'clock news with Jimmy Bartel. Zaki jumping from barrier 6 in the field of 10. For the $5 million Cox plate on Saturday. Very interesting. And we all know what happened in the Might and Power at Caulfield. It got rolled as the $1.30 favourite. A lot of people still like it. Very elegant, obviously, in the mix. State of Rest has been talked up. You know what you're going to get from Animo. It's an interesting field, Jimmy.
Animo is probably the one with the least amount of warts on it going into the race, but the first two you mentioned in Very Elegant and Zaki probably have a higher ceiling and can put the foot down. And
would you be willing to reinvest in Zaki, given what you saw?
No.
It's not a hard thing to confidently go back and say, well, I just watched that.
Nah.
Now you go to the Cox plate. I'm not sure I'm going to reinvest the hard-earned on it.
Yeah, exactly right. So it makes it such a fascinating race, which I reckon a couple of weeks ago we thought Zaki by how far. Even the tab started to pay out on Zaki.
Mm. Yep, and a field of 13 to contest the Group 1 Manikado Stakes over 1,200 metres at the Valley the night before as well.
Dosh make an appearance?
Sava 2XL has drawn gate 7. Dosh got accepted, and the great Graham Begg, the trainer, has decided not to test her over 1,200, the first time that she'll go that distance in a Group 1. So she's going to the Red Anchor, which is a Group 3 race on the Saturday.
Oh, has the owner's personality just seeped down to the horse, just not ready? Just a bit of a soft underbelly, has it? Not ready for the big time.
She's a little star. She's a little star. Is Dosh. Savant 2XL, I think, right here, right now, would be the one to beat.
Yep. Yeah, a great weekend of racing. Racing's absolutely flying at the moment.
Is Cox Plate weekend your favourite weekend?
Derby Day is my favourite day of racing. That's just personal.
Yep.
Lots of Group 1s. So it feels like the kickoff of the Flemington Carnival.
Have you found me a roughie for the Melbourne Cup yet?
I will find you a roughie for the Melbourne Cup tomorrow.
You've got 24 hours to find a roughie to roll incentivise as the $2.50 favourite.
Absolutely.
I hope Peter Moody's not watching. Or listening. This has been Sports Day, your Tuesday edition. We're heading very slowly towards Freedom Friday. Jimmy, have you got your pub booked on Friday?
Nah.
You just stay home?
Yep.
No, this is what lockdown has done to us. See you tomorrow. You are listening to Sports Day. We are powered by Red Energy, Cairnsar's most trusted energy retailer, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Sam McClure and Jimmy Bartel with you for the next hour. Andrew Westacott, the chief of the Australian Grand Prix here in Melbourne, is going to join us. So that race now, Jimmy, is going to take place between April 8 and 10 next year, smack bang in the middle of footy season. Has previously before been on the eve of the footy season. I think a couple of times it shared round one. Now it's going to be, what's that, the best part of a month in?
Yeah, I think people are really keen for it to get back. So it's going to have.
I can't wait for the Grand Prix.
It's going to have a big crowd no matter what. I think we're pretty comfortable with it, aren't we?
Yeah, it just depends on what crowd numbers are going to be next year.
Huge.
That early.
Huge.
No, what the restrictions are going to be.
Jimmy,
it's Victoria.
Yeah, good. I like where you're going. You're going to refer to the health advice. Smart.
This is Victoria. Anything could happen.
That's right. Just refer to the health advice.
Unless it starts affecting polls, right?
Yeah.
And we've also got Dan Bredig on the line from The Age newspaper, cricket writer extraordinaire. Lots happening in cricket, obviously in the build-up to the Ashes, but also Australia clinching a 3-wicket win over New Zealand in their T20 World Cup warm-up in Abu Dhabi. A little earlier this morning, Aaron Finch, the skipper, 24 off 19. Mitch Marsh made 24 off 15. Smith and Stoinis then shared a 48-run fourth wicket stand. Maxwell, Cummins, Swepson, Hazelwood all didn't play. And I guess one of the biggest stories, Jimmy, is that Dave Warner was out for a Golden Duck.
Yeah, exactly right. So he struggled in his IPL side, the Sunriser.
Well, he wasn't getting a game.
Well, because he was playing so poorly.
Well, he and Smith weren't getting a game for Ricky Ponting's team.
Well, because he wasn't making any runs. You can't play someone who's not making runs, and then he comes out and...
Well, plenty of good footballers get games, but they're not getting the footy.
It's a different game.
It is. Dan Brady joins us. Welcome, Dan.
Good to be with you guys.
What did you make of this morning?
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I think the you kind of have to look at it knowing that particularly Glenn Maxwell wasn't there, and I think you know a lot of the way the Australian batting order is going to shake down kind of revolves around him, particularly given in contrast to, as you say, Dave Warner and Steve Smith. He was the best batter in the IPL this edition, so he's very much at the other end of the form scale. So it was interesting. I mean, probably one of the things that that was maybe a little bit on the conservative side from Australia was that they batted Josh Inglis, the new keeper batter in the squad, way down the order after Ashton Agar and after Mitchell Starc, which meant that he had to come in and score the winning runs. So it's going to be very interesting to see whether Australia actually decide to, pull the pin out and pick him in this tournament, or whether they keep persisting with Matthew Wade.
Dan, it's good that you're talking about the batting lineup. Australia has been almost dragged by their heels into T20 format, like the rest of the countries competing, where you pick specialists for the positions. We've almost gone in recent times with the six best openers in our BBL competition. Is this going to be better for us? Because obviously, you mentioned Warner, Finch, Marsh, Smith, Stoinis at the top of the order, and Maxwell's still got to come back in. Do we look more balanced now that we're finally embracing proper format?
Yeah, there's an element of that, and I think there's still a little bit more to go. Sometimes I look at Australia T20 squads and they look to me a little bit like an all-Australian selection, you know, where you've got a bunch of midfielders on the half-forward flank or, you know, playing out of position relative to where they play for their clubs. And I think that's a process that's still going on. You talk about someone like Josh Inglis. He batted four or five for the Perth Scorchers last season with great success. Mitch Marsh actually was also in the middle order for the Scorchers last season, batted a lot with Inglis, but now he finds himself up at number three. That means if he's at number three, well, what are you going to do with Steve Smith? What are you going to do with Marcus Stoinis, who obviously opens for the Melbourne Stars? So there's still a little bit of a give and take to happen there. And another thing, obviously, that they've got to figure out is who's going to come in at six or seven and finish off an innings for them.
So are we still picking Warner with faith and, I guess, history on the side?
Well, you couldn't pick him with faith.
Well, this is why we're asking the great Dan. does he get picked
pick
on reputation?
With optimism, yeah.
Yeah.
I think he starts the tournament on reputation, absolutely. One of the things that I think probably has got to happen with Dave Warner and Aaron Finch to a similar extent, given that they've batted together for a long time, they're both, you know, much closer to the end of their careers than the beginning. I think they need to really clarify between them, well, who's doing what role here? Who's going to go and who's going to try to bat for a significant portion of the innings? I know over the years I've generally just sort of decided, well, whoever's hitting it best on the day can be the one who takes the more aggressive path. But at the moment, I think there probably is a little bit of a need for better clarity on who's doing exactly what at the top.
And the spinning position, obviously, Ashton Agar, fantastic spinner, off spinner. But are the conditions being set up for leg spin, or, you know, throwing the darts in with the off spin?
I think there's a bit of room for both. Adam Zampa was by far the outstanding Australian bowler last night. Took 2 for 17 from his four overs and really helped to pull the momentum back from New Zealand when they were going very well and looked like they might have been on track to score anywhere between 180 and 200, and that went down to 158. So there is definitely room for leg spin if it's bowled well. They've obviously, as you mentioned, got Mitch Swepson sitting on the pine as we speak, and he's someone who, in contrast to Adam Zampa, puts a lot of revolutions on the ball. He's going to get a lot of side spin when he plays, but he also might go for a few more runs if someone finds their range against him. So those are some of the things that they've got to weigh up. It's interesting, Ashton Agar. He was Australia's T20 Player of the Year last time they awarded that in the 2019-20 season at the Allan Border Medal Night. But he hasn't quite had as much success in recent times. And the other thing is he often bats at seven for Australia, but whether the batting position he holds stands up against his record is something else I think they need to consider.
Before we get your sort of expectations of the Aussies in the T20 World Cup, because it's not a strength of ours compared to other nations, we've got to be wary of a couple of powerhouses going at it overnight in Netherlands and Ireland, the traditional rivals in T20 cricket. Curtis Canfer had a double hat-trick, but he started the over with a wide. Well, what would you be doing if captain? He starts with a wide and finishes off the over with a double hat-trick.
Well, I'd be keeping him on for another over if he had one up his sleeve, wouldn't I? That was an extraordinary thing. And really interesting, actually, you know, you talk about, say, the DRS and the fact that it's not in the Big Bash League at the moment. He wouldn't have got that double hat-trick without DRS because two of them were referred. So it can be a very different game, particularly for bowlers appealing for LBW if you don't have that oversight.
Dan, on Finch and Warner, who I feel like are the two biggest stories going into the tournament, is this the last sort of chance for them at this level, do you think? I mean, I know Finch is captain, and you talked about they're not getting any younger. Warner's had a horrid few months in T20 cricket, which has been well documented. If Australia fail in the upcoming World Cup, if they don't get out of the group stage, what's the future like for players like those two?
Well, the obvious thing that Australia have been looking at is that, well, they got two T20 World Cups in 2 years, so that obviously gives them a bit more of a, I suppose you'd say, a short-term focus rather than a longer-term one, and that's probably meant that someone like Aaron Finch has remained there firmly as the captain, because it's like, well, he might not be our captain in 3 years' time, but we've got two World Cups in the next two. The other issue that Australia have that I think is linked between the performance of individual players but also how the team fares is that right at the moment they're only seventh in the world in T20 cricket, and if they don't improve that ranking during this tournament, which obviously they will do if they win enough games to go through to the semi-finals, they actually won't qualify automatically for the Super 12 kind of pointy end part of the tournament. And they would have to be playing in those games that you were mentioning before that include Ireland, that include the Netherlands, include other associate nations. If that were to happen, that would also be a bit of a nightmare for Cricket Australia in terms of scheduling and ticketing games, because they'd have no guarantee of where Australia were going to be playing and against who until basically a week before they do it.
And Dan, do you want to give us your starting 11 for the first test of the Ashes?
First test of the Ashes? Oh, that's a long way away. It's a whole World Cup away. I reckon they should be looking at Usman Khawaja back at the top of the order, given that there's still a cloud over Will Perkowski, unfortunately, as he suffered another concussion. From there, you know, Marnus Labuschagne, Steve Smith.
Head or Maxwell?
I would think that they'll probably be having to look at Travis Head just on the basis that Glenn Maxwell hasn't played much field cricket of late, and it's impossible for him to do it now that he's in the white ball squad in the UAE. The other thing you could do potentially is promote Green. Obviously, he batted at six last season and looked very much at home, but he could move up to five. He's already shown in the Shield that he can bat for a long period of time. That might then give you the opportunity to, there's been a bit of talk about, well, maybe one of these wicket keepers that's scoring runs all over the place, whether it be Josh Inglis, Alex Carey, or Jimmy Pearson from Queensland, maybe they can slot in at number six as a batter ahead of Tim Payne. And then the bowlers pretty much select themselves, I would have thought.
Dan, great to have you on. We'll touch base during the tournament.
No worries.
Dan Bredig there from The Age newspaper. So our first game against South Africa on Saturday night. You know, watch?
Yep, I love it. I love cricket. Well, can't get enough of it. It's good.
I love cricket as well, but I can get enough of it.
Yeah, well, that's you. That's not me. But the thing is, Australia's finally trying to embrace an actual batting lineup, similar to how other nations put their sides together for T20, instead of, as you said, picking almost like an all-Australian squad from our BBL where we have six openers, all the best openers rolling out.
Yeah, I agree with that. Our 2021 season reviews, they begin next. We're going to take a look at the Wooden Spooners, North Melbourne. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy and for Wilson Homes. It is season review time. North Melbourne, they finished 18th on the bottom, 4 wins, 17 losses in David Noble's first season in 2021. In the off-season, Callum Coleman-Jones comes in. Robbie Tarrant joins the Tigers, and their draft hand for the upcoming draft. Jimmy is 120, 42, 47, 72, and 77.
Good draft hand when you got pick number one.
Yes.
And geez, they got some tools. I know we spoke to Dave Noble. You mentioned a couple of those coming in. CCJ, Callum Coleman-Jones, mm-hmm. Young Coblin, Sherry never went to St Kilda, Goldstein, and the great Suva, Larky up forward.
Yeah, I like the Suv.
He was very good. He was very impressive. His development this year, he'd probably be...
huge step forward.
We loved using this as football commentators, don't we? He's in that most improved discussion, yep. I think, last year.
Now, careful there. Careful, because we're trying to... You and I discussed this off air. Season reviews can be one of the more boring things
We've really
turned it on at 10 to 11 when you're struggling to sleep and you'll be asleep in 6 minutes' time. That's not what we're doing here.
No Dennis nap time.
No. In fact, we're going to incorporate a little bit of Squid Games as well, if you're a Netflix fan.
Mm. Green light.
And also?
Red light.
Okay, Jimmy, explain this.
So the green light is whose season went really well.
Yep.
Red light, whose season never really got going. So the green light, all systems go. Red light,
okay.
Handbrake on.
Give me yours.
So my green light was Jai Simpkin. I think he emerged from being a young player.
Yep.
Just a young player at the Kangaroos. A quality player of the competition. His ability to break the lines, he's gone from a high half forward to more inside mid who can get forward. So he was my green light.
Green light.
Oh, I can't believe we've incorporated Squid Games into the season review. And your red light?
Aiden Corr. Never really got going.
No, he didn't, did he?
No, key back, got him from the Giants. He'll fill in nicely. Obviously, greater responsibility with Tarrant
going, yeah.
As well. Josh Walker was very serviceable for him down back. Took a lot of the big jobs, intercept marking, so Aiden Corr is my...
Red light!
Red light.
Thank you, Matthew.
You?
The three key questions... No, that red light's green light's
all
right.
All right, then I've got a game for you after this.
Okay, yeah. Good. The three key questions heading into 2022. One, how is the forward line going to operate with Coleman Jones, Larky, plus Comben, and eventually Edwards?
Well, I think it'll be Larky plus one of those.
Okay.
Because then you've also got the, as like that, the third tool. You know, that's become a position in footy. You're either a really mobile sort of 6'1", 6'2" player who can, you know, really expose matchups. As in, you put someone too tall, they're too agile. You put someone too small, they're too big. And I think Zerha is excellent at that.
Yep.
Then they've got to find a mid-forward type who can hit the scoreboard around Larky and then a specialist small forward.
And then how will they use Coleman Jones?
Forward, rotating with Big Goldstein, who I thought was really good. I thought his season went very underrated.
Yep, and he can spend more time forward too.
Well, Dave Noble said his numbers, you know, the strike rate, and they've got the professor, Mr. Luff down there at Kangaroos, who can analyse data. His one-on-one numbers and all that sort of stuff really stacks up.
Okay, and that leads us into our second key question, the ruck setup.
Goldstein. Goldstein's still doing the bulk.
He's still going to do, at his age, the majority of the ruck work?
But that's how he plays his best footy. He grinds his way through it. He gets it, that mindset. We've seen him try and split it 50-50. I still think he does 70%, not the 95 that he used to do, or 99 where he'd never come off the field. A bit like our Source Jacobs used to do at the Crowbars.
Mm-hmm.
I still think he does 70% with he actually rests forward and Coleman Jones comes up. Or he might actually do... he might play longer, but never go into, say, to the front 70. He just sits back behind play. Look what the Tigers do when Jack Riewoldt takes the ruck or big Tim Tam Tom Hawkins.
He's still shown himself to be quite an apt and able forward when he needs to be over his long career.
Yeah, so you can manage it. When he gets tired, he goes, parks himself forward, but he can also be get tired. And if they lock it in their forward line, he can just sit 60 to 70 metres out from goal. He'll allow one of these big bananas to take the forward throw-ins.
And the third key question for North Melbourne, will they regret not accepting a deal for pick one?
No. You'll never regret having a potential 250-game champ.
Well, they might if he doesn't end up being the player that they want him to be.
Yeah, but no one knows that question. You're better off going with what you know now, and Horne Francis is...
Well, we don't know anything now.
He was clearly the number one pick. That's what we know. And he absolutely brained the Santa Fe in his last game. Go watch it.
He did. No, I went back.
All right.
He looks a freak.
He's so good.
And ready-made to starting round
speaks
one.
Speaks well, mature, level-headed.
Yep. That's the thing about Horne Francis at pick one is that, I mean, Dacos could be anything, but I don't think Dacos is going to be round one ready, is he?
Yeah, he will.
At AFL level?
Yep.
As a forward?
Yep. He'll be more that high half forward where I reckon Horne Francis can play a few more midfield minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Dacos will end up being a mid, you would think.
100%. 100%. My turn to switch the switch the hats.
Yes.
Can I be the journo on the journo sort of thing?
Sure.
I've been. This is called unders overs.
Okay.
So it's going to be broken down to the team, the best goal kicker, and of course your Brownlow medal sort of favourite thing.
Okay, I like it.
So under overs, and if anyone wants to give feedback, send it to your Twitter account. Under overs. So North Melbourne won 4.5 games last year.
Yep.
I've set the line at 6.5 games, under or over. So 7 gets you an over. 6 is an under. 6.5 games.
Overs.
You reckon they'll get 7?
Yep.
Interesting. Write that down. So there you go.
Yep.
Put this in the time machine, Lawrence. Larky, as we spoke about, the great Suva, 42 goals last year in a team that only won
42.
Yeah, that's
what a good effort for a team that won 4 games.
Absolutely. With no real other big man support apart from Zuha. 42 goals in 4.5 wins. The line will be exactly the same. Does he match it? 42.5 is the line. Does he kick 43?
Well, I've just said they'll win 7 more games, so I'm going to say overs.
Ooh. Jai Simpkin won their best and fairest, and we all just acknowledge that he's an emerging talent.
Excellent player.
Like, he's here, but it's how far he gets up in the classes.
Yep, yep.
Only polled 1 Brownlow vote last year.
Yeah, I was a little surprised with that.
But 4.5 wins, I guess.
Yeah.
The line for his Brownlow votes, I'm setting at 9.5. Unders. You reckon he gets under 9.5?
Yeah.
You don't think he polls 10 Brownlow votes?
No. We just polled 1 after he had a really good year.
Yeah, but they only won 4.5. Now you're saying they're winning 7.
Yeah, so he might poll 6.
Well, actually, I can't argue with your rationale there.
you set the line a little high there, I reckon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's our North Melbourne review featuring Squid Games.
And unders and overs.
And overs and unders. I read something the other day about Squid Games that they got produced for less than $20 million. And Netflix are now able to, I'm not sure how, it's a question for another time, able to say that it has made them $900 million.
It's the most viewed thing on Netflix.
Ever.
Ever. You think some of the shows that have been on there.
I wonder what it is about it.
It's
grabbed a lot of people.
Yeah. It is compelling viewing.
It's not really for me.
Oh, you're one of those, are you?
I'm not one of anything. Australian Grand Prix boss Andrew Westacott is going to join us next, as it was confirmed the race for 2022 over the weekend. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're powered by Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer. And for Wilson Homes, they believe in great design, so you love being home. April 8 to April 10, 2022. Open up your diaries. No one has diaries anymore. Open up your phones, go to your calendar, lock that in. It is the Australian Grand Prix. It is back. And I make that less than 6 months away until we get to see these beautiful cars, Jimmy, going around Albert Park. It's one of the great times of the year.
Oh, it's so exciting. And I know when they're about. I live in the area and I can feel my lounge room shake, and it's pretty cool.
Well, I can hear it from my lounge room in Richmond. So you can hear everything shake.
Absolutely.
Maybe not as much as when they were the V8s, but anyway, we digress. Andrew Westacott is the longtime boss of the Australian Grand Prix, and he joins us. Andrew, what an exciting announcement, and we can now start to plan.
Yeah, g'day, Sam. G'day, Jimmy. Yes, it's exciting, and there will be the rumble of the supercars as well as Formula One, and so many of the drivers are going to be wearing different team colours and different teams, because whilst it was 2 years since we had the cancellation, it's actually been 3 years since Formula One's raced in Melbourne, and that means it's way too long between drinks, and it's really exciting.
Andrew, the date, April 8 to April 10, did you guys have any say in the date, or is it just, let's get it back and going and see what happens the year after that?
No, Jimmy, these things are a two-way process, but there's a couple of things that came into play in 2022 and also 2023, and that, you know, there's an increasing number of races in the Gulf States and the Middle East where Ramadan is vitally important, and Ramadan, because it's based on the lunar calendar, is earlier next year than it ever has been, but it's earlier than normal. And what it's meaning is that Saudi Arabia will be race 2, Bahrain will be race 1, because they've got to be staged before Ramadan commences on the 3rd of April, I think, or no, 2nd or 3rd of April. And therefore, we're going to be race 3, so they'll do the 2, they'll have a break, come to us, and it'll be great because the new spec cars will be... you know, they'll be ironed out any bugs and so on. And then we've got a new circuit, new event, and lots of anticipation.
Are you doing much communication with Tennis Australia and other sort of international sports regarding protocol for drivers and teams and et cetera?
Yeah, look, our operations team is speaking regularly with their network of contacts. I'm speaking to Craig pretty regularly about bits and pieces. You know, the learnings that they get at the tennis in January are, you know, really a precursor to what we're going to have. But in April, some 3 months later, it's going to even be more open and more free. But we've got to make sure that we're protecting the safety of the locals, but also the continuity of Formula One, because they would have delivered 41 events across the world since they last were in Melbourne. And they know how to do it, and they know how to maintain the safety of their athletes and team personnel. So, yeah, a lot of dialogue with many parties, Jimmy. So,
Andrew, just to follow up on Jimmy's question, relating it back to Tennis Australia, I remember last year interviewing Craig Tiley and him being very candid about, well, you know, if we'd just given up and not had the tournament, we risk losing it. We risk in another country or another city saying, well, here's the money that we're going to spend. All the players will come here. You just raised a great point about it's actually 3 years since we've had this race. We know how much money is in Formula One. We know how much people love it, both on TV and at the track. Was there a time where you thought, hang on, Melbourne might actually be at risk of losing this thing?
Well, we're on borrowed time, and if we don't stage it in 2022, then when you look at the calendar for next year, there's 23 races. There's new races in Miami. There's a new race in Qatar.
Yep.
They're looking at Las Vegas as well. There's plenty of opportunities for big cities to pay big money, and we've got a secured contract until 2025, and we've got to keep on it because, you know, the Australian Open, MotoGP to a lesser extent, but in a regional area, Formula One, and the big international events are driving our agenda and they're driving our relevance. And you only need to look at something like London where, you know, middle of last year, they got, or middle of this year, Silverstone, 140,000 on race day,
yeah.
Wimbledon, British Open, test match cricket with the Indians. You know, we've got to do a lot to get back to an events capital, let alone one that's going to be one of the big event capitals of the world.
Just taking some notes, Jimmy and I will have to get on that junket for the Vegas Grand Prix whenever that happens.
Yes.
Andrew, I'll be with you. I'll be with you.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. Talk us through, so April 8 to April 10, what are the changes that you've made, whether it be to the circuit, but also just the time of the race? What are we usually about 4 o'clock in daylight savings? This will have to be a little bit earlier, I assume.
Yeah, it will. Now, and let me just point of clarity. The international days are 8, 9 and 10, but we also have supercars and we'll have a huge range. So it'll still be a four-day event. I wouldn't want anyone thinking that it's pruned down to 3 days.
Okay.
But it'll be the 7th to 10th, but Formula One will be on Friday the 8th, Saturday the 9th, Sunday the 10th. So good example is that, as you said, we're not in daylight saving. The days are going to be shorter. Sunset, I think, goes back to about 10 past 6 as opposed to about 7.30, 7.40. So there will necessitate a change to an earlier race by about an hour. We're working through the FIA and Formula One on that at the moment. And it's going to be 3 or 4 weeks into the footy season. So what is a great opportunity is if with maybe Melbourne Storm and the Rebels and a number of interstate teams coming into town for the AFL, great opportunity to have a bumper weekend of sport in the evenings and Grand Prix and international sport during the day.
Changes to the racetrack. When I huff and puff and run around Albert Park Lake, I say there's lots of works always being done. Much change to the track?
Yeah, Jimmy, there is. And we've done that to make the racing more exciting, promote overtaking. There's also spec changes for the cars for 2022. So it's going to be about 5 seconds a lap quicker. So, you know, hopefully your lap times will come down by 5 seconds as well. And we're actually resurfacing it over the Christmas New Year period with an asphalt mix. It'll be a high level of degradation for Formula One cars. Now, recognising that they're going 340 kilometres an hour around Lakeside and pulling 4.5 Gs. So it's not going to wear the bike tyres out or the car tyres, but it will offer higher degradation and a lot more strategy considerations for the pit wall.
Let's hope Pirelli have sorted out their P0s for Max Verstappen and a few others on that track, Andrew.
Yeah, well, what we want to do is have a halfway bet, Sam. I want to make sure that, you know, you're considering a single stop versus a two-stop strategy. You're getting higher levels of deg, and we've got to – we widened pit lane as well by 2 metres to increase the speed limit in pit lane from 60 to 80 kilometres an hour, so it reduces the pit stop penalty. So there's a lot of different changes.
Lewis will be happy.
Come into play. Well, if he gets their pit stops right, won't he?
You increase the speed limit in pit lane for Lewis Hamilton, Jimmy. It's like a red flag to a bull, I reckon.
Yep. If it's 80, he wants to go 90.
He wants to go 90. Yeah, that's correct. And that's why we love the sport. Andrew, we're so excited to have it back. It's been too long. It drives a great buzz in this city and also in this country. And I think it's great that it's going to be on when the footy's back on as well. April's a great time. Crowds will be back up. Vaccination rates will be up. The whole place will be pumping. Thanks for coming on, and we look forward to speaking to you in the build-up.
A pleasure, guys. And one name to keep an eye on over the final weeks of the Formula 2 season is a young Melbourne boy called Oscar Piastri, who might actually win Formula 2 to go on the back of winning Formula 3 last year. And you never know. Mark Webber is suggesting, who manages him, suggesting that Oscar may get the vacant seat at Alfa Romeo. So, fingers crossed, we might see two Aussies in the field. If not, Oscar would be down here as a protege to one of the more senior drivers. So, exciting stuff, and we might have a person who's winning a world championship at the highest level.
And we would love to speak to him on Sports Day if you could arrange that for us.
We'll arrange it. When he wins, I'll line it up with Scoob McClure and James Bartel.
Thanks, Andrew. Andrew Wester got there, the Australian Grand Prix boss. You can hear the excitement in his voice and our voices as well. Jeez, I've missed the Grand Prix. It's back April 7, 8, 9 and 10. More Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Red Energy, Canstar's most trusted energy retailer nationally for 2021, and for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Earlier tonight, Jimmy and I caught up with the Australian Cricketers Association boss, Todd Greenberg. Plenty going on in the world of cricket, and particularly, as we've seen with AFL players and sportsmen and women across the world, vaccinations. Here's some of what Todd had to say to us. Welcome back to Sports. I think you'd be great on reality TV, but it's a conversation we can have another time. Jimmy Bartel is with me, Sports Day for Red Energy and the new Kia Niro, the electric SUV range, which has now landed. I'm just about to chat to Todd Greenberg, the boss of the Australian Cricketers Association. So on the other side for footy, the AFL Players Association boss, Paul Marsh, last night, a weird statement that he put on Twitter. Let me read a little bit of it. The pursuit of players who are still deciding to decide not to or are unable to get vaccinated for COVID-19 applies unfair and necessary pressure on them and their loved ones in circumstances where the rest of us would be afforded privacy. Our players are passionate about the game. The decision not to receive a vaccine that may ultimately mean walking away from a career they love is not a decision that any player would make lightly. He then goes on to almost point towards the media, I reckon. Whilst we know that people will be interested in these cases, especially one that season returns, we ask that people refrain from speculating on the identity of these players and respect the privacy of anyone impacted by the virus as they recover. Clubs will, of course, share necessary details at the right time of positive cases.
The reason why people are speculating, because there's an information void from the Players Association, the AFL, on what their stance is, which has been created. And you're supposed to be, you're the leader of the players. You're appointed as leader of the players. That's your title.
Yep. Todd Greenberg is the leader of the players for the Cricketers, and he joins us live on Sports Day. Todd, welcome.
Evening, guys. Nice to talk to you.
It's a precarious position, I think is the best way of putting it, and it's a bit of a minefield for all of us, Todd. What's the structure of what you've been telling your players? Is there a mandate? And I guess by virtue of the fact that a lot of your players play internationally, it makes it a different scenario.
Yeah, we certainly haven't mandated it to anybody. We've taken a slightly nuanced approach with Cricket Australia and tried to do as much education and information sharing as we possibly can. And I've got to give the state associations around the country and Cricket Australia's medics an enormous rap because they've done an enormous amount of work with the playing groups, giving them lots of information. And look, I don't have the most recent data in front of me, but as of a couple of days ago, we were all but there. We're almost to 100% of all our players with first dose. And I think we're well past 90% fully vaccinated. So
Todd, you haven't had anyone come to you and say that they don't want to get vaccinated?
No, we haven't. We've had some questions. We've had lots of questions, and rightfully so. I think like anybody in the community, they would ask questions about vaccination. But we've tried to give them all of the information. So rather than you know, push the information. We're opening up dialogue, and it's been really well received. I mean, as you've just said before, you know, cricket's an international game, so people realise that if you're going to go internationally, you're going to need a vaccination in order to travel. So, you know, this is across all of our national men's and women's teams, all domestic players, BBL, WBBL, all the way across the country. So, you know, we're in a really, really positive position as we head into summer.
Todd, Jimmy Bartel, really appreciate you coming on and being open and having this discussion because, as we know, everyone's fascinated by what all their sporting codes are doing. A lot of Australian sports love to look overseas, and we see the NBA Players Association was one of the first to make sort of conditions. If you are vaccinated or you're not, so then they allow the choice. Is that a discussion being had with the Australian Cricket Board?
Oh, I think it's a discussion being had with all sports, to be fair, between the players and all sports governing bodies. And there's a number of different ways you can take this. In cricket, the view that we've taken is that rather than push a policy on somebody, let's have a conversation and see where that takes us. And, you know, in a really mature sport like cricket is, you know, with a really high quality playing group, both across males and females, we've seen, you know, pretty much 100% compliance on vaccination. So I think that sends a really good message. All credit to Cricket Australia and the state associations for working closely with us on that. And as I said before, the chief medical officers have spent an enormous amount of time educating players and giving them the right information in order to make good informed decisions. And, you know, ultimately what they're doing is protecting each other, but importantly also they're protecting the game.
Well, you're ultimately charged with protecting the players. That's your brief, that's your charter. Have you workshopped if you had a player or a number of players who said, we will not get vaccinated, but yet Australian cricket says you need to be double vaxxed to play?
Yeah, so we have worked through those at the very beginning, and ultimately, you know, there are impacts for people making decisions. So you have to make decisions, and what those decisions come with are consequences. And some of those consequences will be enforced upon by governing bodies. Others will be enforced upon by government, and some just on private business. I mean, let's face it, if I want to come to Melbourne next month and I want to fly on Qantas, I'm going to have to be double vaccinated. That's a rule that Qantas have made. So I just think that, you know, in the reality and for all of us is there'll be consequences to decisions, and ultimately people need to be well informed to make those decisions.
So Todd, on that, in principle, from where you sit, do you think decisions on mandating or saying that people in a professional landscape need to be vaccinated should be made by, in your circumstance, Cricket Australia, or it should be left up to federal and state health authorities?
Yeah, we're just of the firm view that trying to push something onto somebody and mandating it won't probably get you the result you're looking for. Working together and trying to find a way through some of those challenges is a better course of action. And that's certainly been evidenced by the approach we've taken with Cricket Australia and this particular model. Now, it may not work for everybody, but it's certainly working in our environment. And I'm really pleased about that because what it's meant is that the players and the game are aligned in the position and they're aligned in the approach. And I think that augurs well for a partnership, if you like, going forward.
We live in a very litigious world, you know, at the moment. What happens if someone who decides to be unvaxxed, but yet they come into contact and, you know, pass on the virus to someone who is vaxxed? Wouldn't that put a very difficult situation for the entire sport?
I think it's a question, it's a really difficult question for the entire community. What happens if we're at a game and it happens to a crowd member asking for an autograph, you know, all those sorts of things? What are our venues going to be doing around the country in relation to vaccinated entry or not? You know, there's a multitude of questions that I think are coming down for all leaders across all businesses and sports, and cricket's not immune to that. But, you know, we're working our way through that slowly and surely, and I think we are going to have some challenges. There's no doubt there's going to be some bumps in the road between now and the start of the Ashes and through the Ashes. But, you know, open dialogue, information, and having honest conversations with people are probably the only way through.
One of those honest conversations, I'm sure, will be with Dominic Perrottet. I'm sure, Todd, you've got him on speed dial by now. With all the players coming back into Australia, particularly those from the Middle East early November and onwards, is it just likely, given the new border laws in New South Wales, they'll come through Sydney?
Yeah, well, it's fair to say some of our IPL players have delayed their flights until 1 November to come home. And why wouldn't you if you can come home now and not have to do 14 days of hard quarantine? Many of our players have made huge sacrifices over the last, you know, 12 to 18 months and have done it multiple times. So they'll be pleased not to do that. But, yeah, certainly the route in through Sydney is going to be much easier for a lot of the players, and that'll be really welcomed by a lot of them who are all double vaxxed and have been double vaxxed for a long period of time and get home to their families and make it a lot more seamless. So we're really pleased about that.
And before you leave us, any potential changes to the schedule of the Ashes given border regulations?
No, look, I think, you know, we're obviously an issue for Cricket Australia, but in my discussions with Nick and his team, you know, they're really keen to see the Ashes played as per the schedule. And
yep.
We're very confident. We have been very confident the whole way through that'll be the case. And really looking forward to the 8th of December, 50 days today till the start of the Ashes. So there's a lot of excited players. So, and there's equally a lot of excited fans. So we're all looking forward to it.
Todd, really appreciate you coming on. It's an interesting time for everyone in sport. We can't wait for the Ashes. 50 days and counting. Talk soon.
Good on you guys. Nice to chat.
Interesting stuff there from Todd Greenberg. Yeah, I mean, cricketers are like everyone else. There are going to be issues, and some players, male and female, are not going to want to get vaccinated. It's a difficult time. We saw the press release from Paul Marsh last night from the AFL Players Association. I just get the feeling that, yeah, it's going to be mandated. It's just whether it comes from the sports themselves or from the governments.
It just has to be clear what it is.
And as we talked about earlier in the show with Roger Rashid, the state government and Tennis Australia are saying, well, it's the federal government who decide who come in and under what conditions.
Why is everyone so reluctant to put their position forward?
Well, I just don't think anyone wants to be the one to fire the bullet.
Why? It's going to have to happen at some stage.
Yeah, but they just prefer someone did it for them.
You can't do it last minute. You've got to get people to prepare or make the decision.
Jimmy, I think the one thing that we've known over the last 2 years, whether it's sports, governments, businesses, people, everything during COVID has been the last minute.
Yeah, but don't compound it by making the decision to it.
I'm with you. I think we need strong leadership as much as we ever have.
There we go. Yeah, that's actually displaying strong leadership. You nailed it right there.
I'm going to show strong leadership and say goodnight to you. We've come to the end of the show, and I want you to come back after a couple of strong laps of Albert Park tomorrow and 5 seconds quicker, as Westacott put it.
Sure.
Are you going to do that?
Sure.
I'm not sure if you will. That's it, does it for Jimmy and I. We're off. We'll see you tomorrow. Enjoy your Tuesday evening.